behold, Michael Irvin has called into the show. We're going to start with you. Playmaker, go ahead and defend yourself here. Why are you handing out 88 to anybody that wants one?
First of all, I'm not handing it out to anyone. We are not handing it out to anyone. In order to get this number, you must be what we call a true bred. That means born, bleed, and bred right here with the Dallas Cowboys. Drew Pearson was that.
Oh,
my
God.
Michael Irvin was that. Dez Bryant was that. And now C.D. Lamb is that. And I love this kid. Now, let me tell you something. I ain't talking about I like this kid. I love this kid. I usually, just because of what I do, and I want to always make myself available to guys, I usually call all the young wide receivers that come in. I already called Jerry Judah. Before I could do that, C.D. Lamb called me. We've had multiple conversations, and I love the kid. He's going to be exactly what Dallas need, and he's that solution to all the problems everybody else will give us and get Dallas where they need to be.
The only thing else I got to say is, how about them Cowboys?
How about them Cowboys indeed?
What a weekend it was in Cowboys Nation, and controversial at that. But, you know, what else is new around here, right? So, welcome in to About Them Cowboys here on The Athletic, where our Cowboys gurus will break it all down for you. I am Kent Garrison, running things behind the scenes here, as always, as we dive into the legacy of 88, Andy Dalton becoming a Cowboy, and the debut of an Andy Dalton song that you will not want to miss. And remember, you can follow along with all of our coverage for every sport and every team, not just the Dallas Cowboys, over at The Athletic. Secure your subscription through May of 2021 now at theathletic.com/aboutthemcowboys for 40% off. And that rounds out to about $3 per month, so put off that box of Captain Crunch for at least 1 month and get the most exceptional sports coverage you can get anywhere at The Athletic. And we're also running a 90-day free trial right now. So, if you're skeptical, check us out for 90 days and then secure your subscription with 40% off at theathletic.com/aboutthemcowboys. So now, I'm excited to welcome in our panel for this episode, making her first appearance on the show. You might know her from her time at DallasCowboys.com on one of the dozen or so, shows that they've got going on around there. And she's got her own podcast now called Girls Talking Boys. It's Kelsey Charles. Hi, Kelsey.
What's up, guys? I feel like I should do my little throwback drop that we don't have anymore, and like, so we can make a new one. Like, hi.
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 There you go. I have it somewhere. I'll have to dig through the archives and find that. So next time you come on, I'll welcome you with a hi. But yeah, Kelsey and I worked together a lot at DallasCowboys.com. She hosted a couple podcasts over there and was a marketing guru and always hooked things up at Oxnard. She was the person to go to when you needed to get guests in at Oxnard. And so a lot of memories out there.
I take care of my people.
Yes, yes. We're proud to be your people, and we're happy to have you to talk some Cowboys. Definitely a lot to talk about. But let's welcome in now. He is back to put us in our place when it comes to all things Dallas Cowboys. He's our very own bad boy of Detroit. It's Father John Machota. Hey, John. How are you spending your free time this week?
You know, because you brought up the bad boy of Detroit thing, let me just say for everybody out there that, like, this Last Dance is great, but let's just remember it's being told on a very Bulls side of things. To act like I
very
just
biased.
Love how it was just like already we're through six episodes, just like, oh, these Pistons were so mean to us and these Knicks were so physical and we just had to stand up to these bullies. Please stop with that. But it is entertaining and I have enjoyed watching all the episodes. So yeah, that's what I've been doing.
Gosh, did they do a Bad Boys 30 for 30 already? They did, didn't they?
They have, yeah.
Oh man, they needed 10 parts on that thing. They could do a couple on Rodman alone, once they've done with The Last Dance, but...
No joke.
Yeah, they need to flesh that out a little bit more, make a movie of that.
The whole, like, Vegas trip was like, I was like, what? Like, you just casually decided to go on vacation? What?
What's funny about that is they had a bunch of cameras following him there, too, you know?
Yeah. And I guess his son like had just found out about that through watching The Last Dance too. And I was like, that's epic. Gosh. Like, that's such a Rodman move.
And and imagine being Carmen Electra there, and like Dennis is with all these other chicks just going around town, and she's just like eye candy, or like, you know, a trophy girlfriend or whatever at that time. But yeah,
pretty much.
Not only did he do that, I can't believe he had a camera crew like following him around in Vegas. So, you know, unreal. As a documentary filmmaker, that's the type of stuff you dream about, you know, is like, oh, is there actually footage of it though? There is? Oh my gosh. We got to do an episode on this. So yeah, I'm excited. I still need to watch the most recent ones. I was caught up in Westworld finale last night, so I need to get on that today. More Last Dance, but let's welcome in our host to guide our conversation. It's the one and only Kevin KT Fun Tweets Turner. KT, wow. So much to talk about today. So much on the plate. So much Cowboys news.
They never stop, right?
Never.
There's always time. People like you and John Mashota don't get any time off ever. Because the Cowboys are like, hey, we're going to do something. Which is good because there's no sports right now. So the Cowboys doing stuff is fun.
It's good because John and I actually have stuff to talk about and write about. It's not – you know, like our MLB and NHL writers, you know, in month two of this pandemic, they're trying to figure out stuff to talk about because there's just no news for their teams. You know, if you're covering the Columbus Blue Jackets right now, what are you gonna do a podcast about? So, from that perspective, yeah, it's great that there's always Cowboys news.
Well, for the record, Ken, I loved your piece on the DFW uniforms.
Thank you. Yeah, hopefully, let's get this trending. Hashtag no seafoam. Let's get it going. Tired of it. But yeah, check that out over at The Athletic. I did a little breakdown of the DFW uniform scene. Yeah.
While I do like the one that you came up with, and that does look sweet.
That's cool.
It's a nice traditional look. But that doesn't pop on TV, and that's why they will never change it. That the whole seafoam thing, and then the way that there's a different color on the star and all that, is because it stands out more on TV. And I mean, you hear Jerry talk, like, that's what he cares about more than anything. He knows how important like TV is with everything like that.
I think Jerry is under the impression that it still looks silver through the TV, which is just not true anymore.
Sure. I'm sure, but it stands out like a lot more, especially when you did that photo where you had them both right next to each other. Like the one that you have, like, it looks better. Like, you know, I saw the uniform rankings, and they had the Raiders number one that they did in The Athletic, and I agree with that. And that's a cool, like, traditional-looking thing. But, like, I feel like that one that they wear now is just made because of the way that they think it looks on TV.
I'm willing to bet the Cowboys would have been number one on that list that The Athletic did of all the NFL uniforms if the seafoam and the unmatching colors was not a thing. I think Cowboys would have been number one.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the Colts were ahead of them, and that thing's so boring.
Yeah, Tex Schramm did it because back in the day, back in the 50s and 60s, or I mean, in the 60s and 70s, you know, through a TV, the way the color saturates, there was only a three-color RGB signal to decipher the color from. So the silver was almost impossible to come through the image processing. But now with HD, you see the true color. So it looks even more green now. And, you know, people were tweeting me saying, wow, I thought my TV was messed up all these years that their pants looked like that. I can't believe that they would do that. And to your point, John, they could wear hot pink pants out there and they would stand out. Doesn't mean it's right for the uniform. You know, it doesn't match. It's green, you know.
If that doesn't show you like how far ingrained in this team's DNA marketing is, I don't know what to tell you. Like, truly.
Yeah.
It's because it's been like that from basically day one. Like, their priorities, obviously winning games is important to this team, but I feel like marketing has been pretty far up there as well. And to change the color of your pants and the color of your logos on the field solely for the sake of a television broadcast, I mean, that's massive.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like they could change it now and say why, and people would be like, oh, that makes sense. Yeah. Cool, yeah, HD, yeah, understand it. Cool,
you know? I like when they put the Color Rush white pants with the white uniforms.
I do
That's
like that.
Pretty dope.
I like that, and I like when they wore the white pants with the blue jerseys, which they've done a couple times in the past few years. They did it on Thanksgiving last year, I believe. But I mentioned to one of the brand executives at the Cowboys when I was there about, hey, you guys should do a Color Rush that's navy pants with the navy jerseys, and they looked at me like,
wow, that would be cool. Like, they had never even considered doing that before. And that kind of blew my mind. Like, they didn't think of every possibility of what they could do with these uniforms. Like, they just, it's just gotten to the point where they're just a thing that they've accepted and they'll never change it because, oh, it's tradition, you know? Even though it could be better, they don't care because it's always been that way. Do you know what I'm saying? So they have no reason to change because it's the Cowboys, you know? Even though I think they would look better and maybe sell more jerseys if they had it better. They don't look at it that way. They look, it's like the Texas A&M thing. And I am an Aggie, so I can say this is they don't care how ridiculous it is or seems that they have a ROTC guarding the field and stuff. It's tradition, you know, and that's why we do it. And that's the only reason. And we're not going to change. So I understand both sides of it, but at the same time, it annoys me as somebody who's, you know, overly obsessed with aesthetics of teams. But yeah, I saw the Colts were ranked ahead of them on our list at the Athletic.
Yeah, that was boring. The Colts uniforms are boring to me. The Colts were number 5 on the list.
Yeah.
I didn't like
what?
That.
Yeah, I don't.
I mean, that's, I don't get that. So I didn't like the Bears at number 2 either, to be honest.
I could understand I could understand the Packers or Bears or maybe Steelers being ahead of the Cowboys, but I can't get behind
I like the Steelers.
Yeah, I like the Steelers. It's classic, but
I also have the unpopular opinion where I really like their throwbacks, and I'll die on this hill, so it's fine.
Yeah, well, speaking of uniforms, KT.
Uh-huh. Yes, sir. Let's get it started that way, right? So before we talk about Andy Dalton, we got to talk about CeeDee Lamb. As he gets drafted and then, you know, puts out a good tweet that number 10 should be his number, and then Jerry has a comment that he'd love for CeeDee Lamb to wear number 88 in honor of his friend. I forget the guy's first name, Mr. Lamb, at Arkansas, who wore number 88 and had passed away. And then the days go by, and then earlier in the week, CeeDee Lamb announces that he will be wearing number 88 for the Dallas Cowboys. Let's start with you, Kelsey. What are your thoughts on CeeDee Lamb getting number 88? Was he forced into this? Should he have gotten to choose on his own? Did he get to choose on his own? Your overall thoughts on CeeDee Lamb having to wear 88?
So I actually have several thoughts about it. First of all, I was listening to the fan, like most, probably a couple of people were when they were listening to the broadcast as all of this was going down. And I heard CeeDee say, I want to wear number 10. And so I was like, well, he's going to wear number 10. But then I was also like, well, how did you already know you're going to wear number 10? Like, I've never, being around the team for a couple of years, I've never seen a player automatically, as soon as they've been drafted for the most part, like know what number they were going to wear. So that was a little bit shocking in itself. And then I heard the Jerry comments and I was like, ooh, well, Jerry kind of gets his way. And when I heard 88, I was like, well, I obviously think that this means, not that I thought honestly it was going to happen, but that Dez probably isn't going to be coming back to the team. And I know there's been a lot of Cowboys fans that have been like, one year deal or whatever it may be. And I mean, shoot, like you could probably convince me at like a really low dollar amount for a short amount of time that we might be able to swing it just because I love him. But yeah, I was surprised. I don't think it was necessarily CeeDee's decision because I actually talked to a Sooner Sports reporter, Jessica Cootie, a couple days ago, and she told us some of the logic as to why he's worn the numbers he's worn in the past. CeeDee, 32 was a number he wore, his uncle wore, who was basically like a father figure to him. And so he wore 3 in high school and then he wore 2 in college. So obviously 32 intentional. And so I was trying to like configure some way that I thought that 32 or some organization of it within the teens or the 80s could make some sense for him. The best I came up with was, you know, 10 because 3 plus 2 times 2 for a second year. Like, I was stretching it. So either way, yeah, I do think that he was kind of pushed into this by the team. I think though, that the way you reframe it could be an interesting perspective that this organization views him as the next coming or good enough to wear that number. I don't think they give out this number lightly. It's like the 94s. It's like, you know, I don't think you'll see an 82 if ever, but if they ever did, you can't hold back every number forever. So it's definitely an interesting development. And I also, quite frankly, again, we go back to marketing. This team is very marketing minded, and it wouldn't surprise me in the least if that was a small factor in why they decided to give him this number, because it's going to be a really big deal. But it's really exciting for Cowboys fans to have a wide receiver drafted in the first round, especially when they had other needs. So it's a new regime, a new era, I guess, for this team. And so to build off that excitement, why not bring in another 88?
Yeah, I think it just comes down to Jerry Jones gets what Jerry Jones wants. And Jerry has a very, he has got a very good persona on the outside, especially when he does interviews and that, and when he's around people, that, you know, he's kind of comes off as this cool old grandpa. And I think a lot of people see a different side of Jerry Jones than what he is behind the scenes. And I was watching this documentary recently on HBO. It's called like Becoming Warren Buffett. And I'm so fascinated by like how Warren Buffett became, you know, the richest man in the world. And you know, he's close with Bill Gates. And these guys, when they talk, you're just like, oh, he seems like a really nice guy. You know, he seems like he'd be really cool to hang out with. And he just seems like he just wants to have a good time. And it's like, no, these guys become successful like this because they're just absolute beasts behind the scenes and they get what they want. And that's how Jerry Jones is. And as soon as he mentioned that his old teammate who passed away in December, Jerry Lamb, wore 88, and how, like, you know, he'd like to see CD go on and be another Lamb to wear that number and to follow in the footsteps of Drew Pearson and Michael Irvin and Dez Bryant, I was like, oh, this guy's going to be wearing 88. I also think it's interesting how teams will move on number-wise from guys like that. You see it more now, though, where they want to give the number out to somebody next to kind of just move on. And I don't know if it's because of jersey sales or whatever, but it's just to kind of like move it on to the next chapter. So, I think it all comes down to Jerry. I don't think CeeDee Lamb, like a lot of these younger receivers, they want to wear the numbers like, you know, between 10 and 19. You know, the older receivers are the ones that wore the numbers in the 80s. And so Jerry wanted him to wear 88, so he's wearing 88.
Why do you think that is?
Yeah.
Why is what?
Like the older receivers wear the 80s and the younger ones wear the teens.
I think all the younger players, just not receivers, all younger players all want to wear something below the number 20. I mean, college football now is crazy with how many defensive linemen wear single digits. And I think it's kind of funny, like even, you know, watching some of the film on Kalyvon Chaisson going into this year and just seeing him in a lower number like that, I literally thought it made him look like he was smaller than what he really is. And there's been some good defensive linemen. I'm trying to think of one off the top of my head. Rashawn Gary from Michigan wore a single digit, and it just makes you look. What's that?
Chase Young?
Derrick Brown, Chase Young.
They were Taco? Yeah.
It's more of a now thing. I feel like guys, younger, like now generation wants to wear the lower numbers.
Well, see, in football, though, because you have 53 players, football is less about, you know, retiring uniform numbers. Like basketball and baseball, they're retiring uniform numbers all the time. Just getting rid of them. No one will ever wear this one again. And it seems like that happens all the time. In football, you can't really do that because you need the numbers because your roster has so many people on it. I like the idea of, you know, turning 88 into this iconic franchise number forever. And that's like a standard. But I do think at all times the player should have the choice of the numbers that are available. And when Jerry went and said that, it's like, man, this is Dez Bryant all over again. I don't know if Dez wanted to wear 88 in the beginning. I actually don't remember that far back. But I remember Jerry pushing for it. After they drafted him, Jerry was trying to get Dez to wear the iconic number 88, which is fine. Like, it's just a number. In the end, it's very it's very unimportant. But I was just like, just let him wear what he wants to wear.
Katie, you know what?
He shouldn't be forced to do anything.
It made me think of, like, the Cowboys obviously haven't drafted a quarterback very high, really not since, Troy Aikman might be the last one. And it made me think, like, if they drafted Trevor Lawrence, would they give him 12 or 8? Because no one's wore 12 or 8 because of Staubach or Aikman. But I feel like with the way the Cowboys are, if they ever got in a position where they had the number one pick and it was obviously going to be this clear-cut quarterback, I wouldn't be surprised if they gave him 8.
What if they gave Andy Dalton number 9?
No chance. 14's available.
Set the world on fire.
Lance Lenoir's not on the team anymore, so 14 is going to be Dalton. But
Yeah.
10 was Tavon Austin, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And yep. And I was saying there, Tavon Austin, it's not out of this world that he could return. I think it is now. But before that, like, and then we were talking about Dez, like, and it seems like very, like, not going to happen type of conversation, but still, like, it's still out there every once in a while. Like, those two guys, they're going, oh, I think Tavon would be more likely to come back and wear number 10 again because everyone in the locker room loves him. But it's like, I don't know. I feel like the owner shouldn't shouldn't do that. It's kind of just forcing stuff on players.
You know, KT, he probably definitely called CD and like told him the story about his teammate. And
yeah,
put CD,
he sold it to him.
And, yeah, and put CD in a position where he couldn't say no.
But you guys, like, this is what he loves to do. Like, he's a marketer. He's a business kind of guy. Like, I feel like in my heart of hearts, he obviously had a really sentimental connection to this number. And he, you know, he thinks highly of CD. So he's like, well, I'm going to go sell it to him. Like, he lives off of that stuff, don't you think? You know, he's like, oh, absolutely, this guy wants to do this. Like, let me go ahead and convince him that he is the next it guy. Like, he is the next franchise, what, like, receiver for this team. Like, he lives off of that.
It doesn't do CD any of a service, KT, of though having to live up to that expectation, you know,
yeah, rather than he was already going to be high enough.
Yeah,
right?
He was already going to have enough hype. But I mean, pave your own path, be your own player, you know, and now he's going to be compared to Michael Irvin and Dez Bryant with everything he does. That's Antonio Bryant flamed out because of that almost very same thing. It's like, you know, he never lived up to what they could be. And that's a high standard to live up to. I mean, Dez Bryant has like 80 touchdowns, you know? I mean, that's, even if he lives up to Dez's standard, that's high, let alone Drew Pearson and Michael Irvin. I mean, I would rather, like you said, have him pave his own path with number 10 and be his own player and make that number iconic, put that number in the Ring of Honor, you know?
You already have like a first round tag to your name in the NFL these days. Like, just look at what happened with Taco or any first round pick that flames out. It's all, they become a punchline. And maybe that's because of the internet and social media or whatever, but they become this like punchline if they fail as a first round pick. Like, he's already got that. You don't need to like put these iconic wide receivers in front of him, and he's got to live up to that as well. I think CD can handle it, but it just seems like bad strategy. Like, there's something about like manipulation has a negative connotation, and I think sometimes it is a bad thing to do. But a lot of people that have worked in sales before, part of your job is to manipulate the customer, and that's kind of what I think happened here. I think CeeDee Lamb was manipulated a little bit.
They probably told him as well how many they would sell, though. Too, it's like, don't you want to see that 88 out there again with that Lamb on there?
That first jersey when you walk into the pro shop.
Right.
And then that's where you have to say, Jerry, I don't give a damn how many jerseys we sell. I just let me pick my own number, dude.
Easier, I mean, do we at least think that he's going to be like the number one receiver, though, like in a year or two? Do we feel like that's definitely going to be the case? Because if that's the case, then couldn't you say then from a perspective like standpoint that he's at least living up to the 88 within this era, if you will?
I think he's going to be on that. I think he'll be on that level. I think it depends a lot on Amari Cooper and where he takes his game from here, because they're both going to be put in a situation where one of them is going to be open almost all the time because you're just not going to be able to double both of them. Now, I do think that they both have chance to be number one type receivers, which is rare for teams to have. But I mean, I don't see this kid having very much problem transitioning into the NFL with what Kellen Moore is doing, with how quickly, you know, they're going to adapt things that made him successful at Oklahoma and the new wrinkles that they're going to put in. I mean, I don't know that he could come into a better situation than this one. And just the way he went from being this high school star, you know, down in Houston, where you think that, like, you know, some of these guys, especially at the wide receiver position, it's going to take him like a year, maybe two, you know, maybe he's going to have to redshirt. And this kid stepped in right away with Baker Mayfield and was like their number two receiver. And then the next year, you know, a new quarterback, Kyler Murray, and then he starts taking off there. And then his third year, you know, Jalen Hurts is his quarterback, and he just keeps taking it to another level. And I just don't get the sense from talking to people that this is going to be much of an adjustment for him. Like, I'm not saying he's going to be a 1,000-yard receiver right away, but I feel very strongly that he will make a bigger impact his rookie season than anybody else the Cowboys could have drafted.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And you look at, like, and Amari Cooper's been a high-volume guy. I mean, we've seen him have close to 100 catches before. But I think we're looking at two guys who would surprise me if they had 75 or 80 catches in the same year, assuming health. I mean, CD had 65 catches, and the year before that, 62 catches in Oklahoma. He's got the ability to be a high-volume, high-target guy. And I think McCarthy will do a lot of things And Kellen Moore as well, of course. But I think we'll do a lot of things that are centered around getting him, you know, the ball in his hands quickly in space and let him go. I mean, he's a yards after catch machine.
And one other thing I just want to point out is that because of Amari Cooper and the way his personality is, like, it's a very rare situation because Amari will be just fine if they win and CD has 140 yards and two touchdowns and Amari has three catches and 40 yards. Like, and that's so rare for a number one receiver to be able to be like, no, that's fine. But that is Amari Cooper's personality. So while if CD Lamb might have went to a different team, maybe you have some type of ego with another established player already there. I don't see that at all being the case with Amari Cooper.
And you have Gallup too. So all three of them, like, it's going to be fun.
Oh, it's gonna be a blast, and that's why it's interesting. They still haven't signed Dak, and then we get the news yesterday that the Red Rifle's in town. Andy Dalton signs a 1-year, $7 million contract, $3 million guaranteed, what it really is, but $7 million total. Kelsey, what was your immediate reaction to find out that the TCU great Andy Dalton is now a Dallas Cowboy?
Well, I laughed at first because, of course, in, like, true Cowboys fashion, it happens on, like, Saturday night at 8:30 p.m. or whatever it is. Like, the timing of this breaking news, it's never ideal. I feel for people that, like, I cover the team from a day-to-day basis because I was like, dang, Saturday night? Really? But I'm excited. I think it's a great move. Like, you can't not be excited in my perspective because if you think about it, you know, we've needed to secure this backup quarterback situation. And I think there's a lot of moving parts in this conversation. I know we're going to get into them, but it's a smart move from a perspective standpoint. You need to, it's great to have a guy that can step in. And if your quarterback goes down QB1, that he can come in and give you a chance to win games, a true chance to win games. Andy Dalton's been to the playoffs. He's a proven guy. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say he's the next coming because we all know that he went through some struggles, but that's not what we're not worried about that. Like, he's going to give you a better chance to win games than a Cooper Rush will. And from a money perspective, I feel really good about it. 1 year, $7 million, $3 million guaranteed, workout bonus, roster bonus. I'm sure it's kind of how those other $4 million are structured. But for perspective, 8 years ago, we paid Kyle Orton $10.5 million over 3 years. So, and Matt Castle, you can't really count him. John Kitna, I think, was $8 million for between 2009 and 11. So this is a really, really comparative deal. Also, those deals were both years ago. So add an inflation, and I think we're getting a steal. He wants to stay close to home, I'm sure, because he has a place here. And there's a lot of uncertainty right now. So I can't give this front office enough credit for this move because it just makes sense. And I know we'll dive into this more, but no, I don't think it's insurance and trying to push Dak to sign his deal faster.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't think Andy Dalton would come to the Cowboys. I thought he was either going to the Patriots or the Jaguars. And so, you know, I'm on the phone talking to a friend on Saturday night, and I have alerts on my phone for certain writers, and Adam Schefter's one of them, and he broke that story. And so it's like mid-conversation, you're just like, hey, I got to go. I got to start calling some people. I got to figure some stuff out here. And then I knew I was going to have to write. And so it's funny because Adam Schefter just did this really, he did this great hour-long thing on Twitter recently where he just took questions from young journalists and things like that. And getting, if you go through, make it through the whole hour of the thing, you basically learn that Adam Schefter has no life. Like, he can't do anything without having, his phone has to be with him at all times because you just never know when someone's going to call you and tip you off on something. And so he shared a story about, like, in 2016, some huge news broke while he was working out at some gym and he didn't have his phone on him. And then ever since then, like, he's never, like, he has a Peloton now, works out at home and has his phone on him at all times because you just never know. And so while I sit there and I'm like, man, this sucks, you know, Saturday night, not that I'm really doing anything. It's not like there's much going on right now, but it's like kind of, I don't mind it at all because I'm not covering all 32 teams like a guy like that is. And so when stuff like that happens, I also don't care because it's a Cowboys thing and it keeps everything interesting. And that's what the Cowboys do best. I mean, I wouldn't enjoy my job if I was covering as much as I do now, if I was covering like the Tennessee Titans. And that's part of the reason that I like it is because they always keep it interesting and they're always in the mix for somebody. But in regards to Andy Dalton, two things that immediately jumped out to me. One is that the deal wasn't for that much, but it's still more than what Jameis Winston got. And if this move would have been for Jameis Winston, it would have been even crazier. and people would have been like, oh, is this guy going to compete for Dak's job? We're not to say people aren't saying that right now, but I think it's a little bit more clear cut at where Andy Dalton is at the stage of his career that he's going to be the backup. Now, he does provide a little bit of that. Not that Dak's going to go Le'Veon Bell and not show up because he's got the franchise tag on him, but it does give you a guy that if stuff did get really nasty, that you do have somebody at least that you feel confident can drive the bus, and he can certainly do that. Another thought I had when I was writing the story Saturday night was just looking at his stats and how much they won early in his career in Cincinnati. And one of the reasons I thought he'd go to Jacksonville is because his offensive coordinator was Jay Gruden in Cincinnati early on, and Jay Gruden is now the OC in Jacksonville. And so when I was writing that, I'm just looking at these stats, and I'm just like, Joe Burrow's not going to do this in his first 3 or 4 years in Cincinnati. And now, obviously, Andy Dalton, he got drafted in the same year as A.J. Green. He had better weapons than what Joe Burrow's got. But it just like the ceiling is set so high for Joe Burrow going into Cincinnati. And I think Bengals fans would be, you know, just floored if he was able to do what Andy Dalton did early on in his career. And so he's an interesting addition for sure. And only $3 million, that's not anything. When you talk about the position, and up to $7 million, if he was, you know, he'd have to meet a lot of different things. He'd have to end up being the starter and winning games and things like that. But it just, I mean, this is just such a Cowboys move. They just always keep things interesting.
You know, my thoughts were very so. A, are they better? Probably feel much better about, you know, if Andy Dalton has to go out and win them a game because Dak got hurt. I feel much better about Andy Dalton than Cooper Rush, obviously. The thing that I was kind of not worried about, because I think that they can still kind of do some things, but just the way that the league's economy is going to shift here for guys who wanted, even Dak might fall into this boat as well, guys who wanted a lot of big money, you're going to see a little bit of change. I don't know if it's going to be a severe change because the NFL still dominates and still has great TV deals, but you're going to see the salary cap be affected a little bit here. And guys like Jadeveon Clowney may not be able to go get that 5-year, $100 million deal that they want. So the first thing I wanted them to do was get on the phone and sign Jadeveon Clowney or Everson Griffin, or at least try to make one of those deals work. So I didn't like spending resources on a backup quarterback. I want to approach those areas first, but they might be working on that, and they may have made the decision that maybe Griffin and Clowney's not for them. I'm not sure. But that was one thing before Andy Dalton had even signed here, and the topic kind of came up. I was like, well, just make sure you're calling Clowney first, or make sure you're calling Everson Griffin first. The other thing I would say, though, is, you know, Dak, it's not like Dak wasn't hurt last year. I mean, Dak was kind of a problem at the end of the year last year because his shoulder was jacked up. And I think to get the most out of Dak, you still want him running. And as he gets older, you're going to want him to do that less. But I think you still want him running and being mobile even more so than he has been. And he's proven now, he's going into year five, that he's not the same guy that he was in his first couple of years when it comes to durability. I mean, he was hurt last year, whether anyone likes it or not. So if you put yourself in a situation where you can give Dak a week maybe, or I'm just thinking about all these wild scenarios here. But what if you get in a situation where you have a 3-game division lead late in the year and you can give Dak a rest? Or what if you Dak's shoulder is a problem and he's questionable? Well, you know what? We could run Andy Dalton out there for a couple series and see if he can pull it together. Maybe Dak doesn't have to play today because of his shoulder. Like little things like that. They didn't want any business running Cooper Rush out there. They did not want to do that at all. And I think that this move kind of shows that. So,
if Dak does – you know, hold out at all, even in camp or whatever, you've got a quarterback in there who they know can gel with the offense. Yeah, you can trust to throw the ball and learn the offense and give them a good look, basically. You know what you've got in Andy Dalton. If you threw Cooper Rush out there as the starter during camp, are the receivers getting the best looks that they can get? You know, probably not.
Is this actually going to be a scenario that we see though? Because I was on Twitter this morning because I live from my phone nowadays, but I saw David Hellman tweet that July 15th is the window, the negotiation window closes. So even so, that's before camp starts. And so he would have to be at camp on the franchise tag anyways, because the window would be closed. So this isn't even like an issue of, are we pressuring Dak to sign his deal faster? Because either way, he's going to make, what, $33 million next year? He'd like to probably make 38, I believe, is kind of the number that I've heard tossed around, the people that know way better than me. So I don't feel like the scenario actually lines up that we can make the solid argument that Andy Dalton is the pressure to get Dak to put pen to paper.
See, that's where it gets kind of crazy. Go ahead, John.
I was just going to say, yeah, it's not, but I'm just going to take this away from I'm just going to take this as in just being Dak Prescott and just conversations I've had with Dak Prescott. Guarantee he doesn't love this because, and to KT's point about the sitting out games late in season, Dak is not going to do that. Dak has said many times that you don't ever want to let somebody go in there and even possibly just take your job for a little bit because you might never get it back, because he's literally taken that job from everybody, whether it was in high school, whether it was in college, and then Romo in the pros. He's not going to want, I'm telling you right now, as bad as he was banged up last year at the end of the year, no way was Andy Dalton, if he was on the team last year, going to get in and play against Philly or play at the end of the year against the Redskins after Dak hurt his shoulder in week 15 against the Rams. He's too much of a competitor for that. Now, once he gets there and everything's done with his contract and everything gets taken care of, and the Cowboys have shown no signs that they're not, interested in still doing that, that's still the goal. He's not going to want to give up reps to anybody, let alone somebody that, he hasn't won any playoff games, but he has an established winning record. And I just think of it from anybody else's standpoint. A big topic right now in the NFL is obviously the Packers trading up and drafting Jordan Love. Well, Aaron Rodgers is a million times better than Jordan Love probably will ever be. But I guarantee you Aaron Rodgers doesn't love the fact that they made a move like that, So from that standpoint, I don't think it forces anybody to take, pen to paper, like you said, Kelsey. But I just find it hard to believe that he's just completely oh, this is great. Yeah, get another, really established guy behind me. I don't know that he absolutely loves that idea. And when he saw that, I don't know that he would sit there and be oh, yeah, this is a great move. I think he was just fine with Cooper Rush being his backup.
Yeah. No, it's a great point, because honestly, you can't sit there and think that this front office hasn't at least considered that. Again, they're very business savvy in that regard. So while even if they could tell us that they don't believe that they're not Dak's our guy. And I know, Dez kind of was on Twitter the other day too, talking about this. And he was like, I've been told things before too, and they didn't quite pan out. So that's a great point.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad you mentioned Dez, because it wouldn't be a big Cowboys story without Dez weighing in on Twitter. Here's what he said. Nothing against Andy Dalton, because I think he's a great player, but the Cowboys are extremely out of line. Pay Dak. I watched the Cowboys pay Tony twice, once without a winning record. I guess the Cowboys viewing the quarterback position a plug-in piece because of the dominant offense.
Ooh.
Yeah,
that's a trigger word.
That's a bad
take. It's absolutely a bad take, and Dez has had a lot of bad takes on Twitter, if we're being honest. He's had some good ones too, but he's had a lot of bad ones as well. I just – the Cowboys right now, I mean, this is – yeah, they should have paid Dak months ago. That's fine to have that opinion. That's great, but who knows what Dak's agents were wanting. They will get a deal done with Dak, but I think right now it's irresponsible for the Cowboys to pay Dak, just because – I don't think anyone can really understand what is going to happen to the economy. You've never done contracts during a global pandemic before. So let's maybe not give out a big long-term contract here. Just look at every big business company in the world right now. What are they doing? They're cutting assets. I know it's a little different, but to me, Jerry and Steven know this too. They would be foolish to go dole out a big 5-year deal for Dak right now. It just you should understand where the salary cap is going to go and where the economy of the league is going to go before you give that deal out. And I think Dak and his agent CAA, I think they probably understand that, to be honest.
So you're going to go ahead and put him on the tag. Is that what you're saying?
Keep him on the tag. And look, it sucks. It'd be great to get the deal done, but I think you just have to do that, because what if the salary cap drops? And I think it's possible. I know it seems insane because the NFL is king, but let's wait and see if we get a full season. Yeah, I'm also, to be perfectly clear, I'm the guy coming from the perspective of I really don't understand how you prevent players spreading droplets of their breathing onto other players. I just think that's an impossible thing to do. So I'm the guy who really doesn't think football happens this year. And I know that seems extreme and it's early May. I hope I'm wrong. But as of right now, until we get some significant traction on testing and vaccination, which is, you know, we'll see. You know, I think college football's got the most realistic, you know, idea here, talking about maybe doing football in February. And I just, the NFL is going to do it because they're the NFL. We saw how they handled the draft. It is head down, plow forward. But eventually we're going to be stopped. We're going to have to stop and think about the basic fundamental thing of, wait, this disease spreads by breathing on each other and spreading respiratory droplets. There's no way in football, a sport in which you're touching someone at all times, that you will not spread that. And all it's going to take is one around the league, just like the NBA. It will take one case before the rest of the league goes, hell no, I'm not doing that. And there will not be football this year. So I personally think that's where it's going. I'm not trying to take the conversation down that road. But what I mean is, why would you give Dak that contract if there's a chance you're not getting a gate at your stadium this year? The salary cap will go down.
Because you want Dak. It shows commitment to Dak, if anything. I see Dez's point there. I see it as disrespectful to Dak. Like, if you're fully convinced that he's your quarterback that's going to lead you to the promised land, you sign him and you work out a deal and you don't leave him hanging like this. I see that perspective. I don't think that they view the quarterback position as a plug and play at all. I think that's ridiculous. But if they're fully convinced that Dak Prescott is the guy, sign him. And sign him now before Pat Mahomes sets the market even higher when he does his extension, you know?
I don't think that there's just two sides to this thing. And I think that's what Dez isn't taking into consideration, because all we're hearing is from the Cowboys side. We don't know exactly. No one has exactly what Dak's side is asking for. And his representatives are very good. They're the best of the best. And that's why you're not hearing that side of it. But to just assume that you know what's going on, to bring in Tony's two contracts when it was never dragged out like this. Like Tony, I mean, I remember one of Tony's deals got done, the one in, I think it was 2013. It was like in the middle of, I remember we were at like the, I think the Elite Eight or Sweet 16 was out at the stadium, and it was just like, boom, this is announced. Like it was never like a long drawn out thing. Dak wants to be one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league. And that's what his representation is fighting for. And he has every right to do that, but to just sit there and just automatically just assume Cowboys are being cheap. Like, I don't know if I would go there. I think and this is just from an outsider's perspective. They're asking for a lot too. Both sides are asking for a lot, you know, and so it's just not that easy. It's not as simple as people think. You know, there's both sides. There's people that think that Cowboys, come on, this is your quarterback. Give him a few extra million and just be on with what's a couple million to you. But then the other side of it is like, okay, well, if you're Dak Prescott and you have 10 different endorsement deals and you're the Cowboys quarterback, why do you need a couple extra million too? Why don't you take a couple million less? It just, you know, it's really hard for everyday people that don't make money anywhere near that universe to step in and say things. But like, there's just so much more involved in this. I find it hard to believe. And then the thing I always have to fall back on, since I've lived here, coming from Detroit, where this doesn't necessarily always happen, the Cowboys pay the guys they want to pay. Like, they're not some deadbeat franchise that just lets people walk out the door. Like, their top players, the Cowboys pay them. So it's hard for me to sit here and just be like, oh, poor Dak. Like, oh, they just won't pay him. They need to pay him. Like, there's two sides to this. He should be paid what he wants, but the Cowboys also have their side of it, and there should be a dollar amount that they have set where they're like, hey, we're not willing to come above this. We have other players that we have to pay on this team. We're obviously putting a good roster around him. That offense is loaded with talent. It's not like they're sitting there and they're treating him like the Packers, and they're being like, well, Dak, we're trying to put talent around you. And you're like, excuse me, the Packers, you're not putting any talent around me at all. So there's two sides of the story.
I think it's interesting, too. I mean, Dez obviously is very – he loves this game so much. And there's a very high sense of emotion when you talk about these types of things. And I think you saw that in his tweets. And he comes from the player perspective where he's like – I'm good. I've given you my everything. Now pay me. And I think he's speaking from that emotional perspective too. And I get that. But, you know, like you guys said, it is more than that, because it is a business. Like, Jerry thrives off these type of things, and Dak's people do as well. They, like you said, John, they're the best in the business. And while we don't know a number, like, we've seen numbers that have been thrown around on Twitter. I'm not privy to the true information and what's real and what's not, but, you know, I think they're at a stalemate for whatever reason. And I also would be interested in kind of getting your thoughts on the conversation around what you mentioned, John, where people were like, well, Dak, don't be selfish. Just sign the deal. Like 30, whatever they're offering you should probably be enough. Like a couple million. Like who cares? You're making more money. Do you subscribe to that concept? Or do you feel like, hey, listen, it's a business. They should get whatever they can as guaranteed and as much as they can, because at one point or another, this team's going to turn on them when they're not as good or they don't need them and just kick them out the door. And then like, they might be done. Like what happens then? Well, because I personally feel like, yeah, I'd like to hear your thoughts rather.
I can only speak on it from my own perspective because I can't get in Dak Prescott's head and know how he feels. I mean, just like I said, from conversations I've had with him about different things, he certainly believes, Dak Prescott believes that he could go to the Cincinnati Bengals right now and would be able to turn that franchise around. Now, that's because that's the way you're supposed to think as a quarterback. Like, you're not supposed to worry about what the other pieces are. You're supposed to have the confidence in yourself that no matter what situation, Lions, Bengals, Browns, you're going to go in there and you're going to be able to make them successful, whether that's true or not. And there's plenty of argument to say that you would not be successful in those organizations because they're not set up correctly to be successful. So my biggest argument, I'm a big believer, get every dollar you can get, everybody in any walk of life, whatever your job is, get every dollar you can get, whatever you can make and you're worth, take it. But the one part of that I will say for me personally, I would probably take just a little bit less from the because of the pressure. Because if you get and you max out on a deal that like is right up there with the highest paid quarterbacks in the league, every time you have a bad game, it's going to be magnified even more already as the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. Why not give yourself a little bit of a cushion to where you take a really good deal, but at the same time, you're just kind of like, you don't have to worry about every bad game you have. People are going to be criticizing you because they're like, hey, the money you make.
$100 million quarterback. Like,
yeah, you need to. Yeah, you can't be bus driver. You have to carry the team. Every time that they're playing sloppy, you have to put the team on your back and carry them. You know, whether that's true and that happens or not, that'll be the narrative of it. And so from that standpoint, I would probably take what they have on the table right now. But who knows? A year from now, whenever he gets his deal, whenever that might be, you know, he could make a lot more than he's making right now, and he'll look like the genius in that. And obviously, you saw last year he didn't have a problem playing where he was in the final year of his contract, so it didn't bother him. So maybe it won't bother him playing under the franchise tag either. So I just feel like every individual is different.
I feel like we should, at this point, I feel like after that good, intense contract discussion, should we go to a lighter note and go to what I think will be the highlight of this podcast? Kent, have you done an Andy Dalton song?
I do. I have an Andy Dalton song, and I hope everyone enjoys this. When Andy Dalton was signed, I just had the song in my head, and I wanted to bring it to the podcast. So
basically you created a masterpiece in like 48 hours, maybe 36 is what you're telling us.
It was this morning, but
So genuinely impressive.
7 a.m. today, I got up and
a man of many traits.
Hey, I gotta stay on this grind. You know, work doesn't stop just because the country stops. You know what I'm saying? So I'm gonna go ahead and start this one. KT, are you ready?
Oh, I'm so ready.
Here we go. This one goes out to KT Turner, Father John Mishoda, Kelsey Charles.
Swoon.
Might know this from a band called Rim back in the day.
Broadus would love this. It's his favorite band.
Another redhead taking snaps. Yeah, 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 yeah. Andy Dalton in a cowboy hat. Yeah, 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 yeah. Number 21 behind our leader. Yeah, 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 yeah. Dak wants to sign, but he's not too eager. Yeah, 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 yeah. Mike McCarthy and Kellen Moore. Yeah, 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 yeah. Need a quarterback so they can score. Yeah, 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 yeah. Now, Andy, did you hear about this one? Time Jerry tried to make a reference.
I want Mason Glory help.
Jerry's on the Bravo Eugenia, so he won't get touched. If you believe they need a quarterback room,
a quarterback room. If you believe, there's nothing up their sleeve. There's nothing to prove.
Buy the album now, wherever records are sold. Thank you.
Encore! Encore!
I was waiting on the second verse.
Maybe we'll debut a second verse during the season, but
can I be your backup vocals on that one? When,
thank you.
Yeah, like I'm available for backup vocals for you. I got you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, no, and he was signed. I was like, I had that Andy Kaufman song in my head, and so there you go.
Let me just say this. If you don't think you're getting value from subscribing to The Athletic based off of that alone, then I can't help you.
Thank you, Kelsey. I appreciate that. I do.
I got nothing for you.
For all the kids out there, the band is R.E.M., just go look it up. That's legit Broadus's favorite band, I believe.
I love R.E.M. too. Love them, yeah. But hopefully Andy enjoys that. It gets back around to him, and hopefully he knows about the Bravo Eugenia. By the way, big mystery going around about where the Bravo Eugenia is. I want to introduce our listener to the vesselfinder.com.
Oh my God.
All you got to do is
I will spend all day
type
on
in
this
Bravo
website.
Eugenia, and it tracks it. It shows pictures, like history, a current course. Yes, that was a discovery of ours last
me?
Week. No, vesselfinder.com.
Oh my God. That
oh
is
my
amazing.
God, that's right.
The current position is at Northwest Atlantic Ocean.
Oh.
Wow.
Last time I checked, he was docked in Miami.
It says it's a yacht built in 2018, currently sailing under the flag of the Cayman Islands.
Oh.
May 3rd. Okay, yeah, it says Miami, though, actually.
Port Miami.
Yeah, 15 hours ago, yeah.
Oh, well, he's still down there.
Technically, that is we don't think about it that way, but technically that is the Northwest Atlantic Ocean.
It is. Miami, it is, but hey.
Which is weird.
Next time he's on a trip, you can actually see where he's been. Which is hilarious. I know they go to Cannes Film Festival every year, so he like sails it out to Italy, you know, and France and all that, and does that whole thing. He might like I don't know sail it through the Panama Canal to go to Oxnard. I don't know what they're gonna do there, but
love the definition of it. It says I don't know what the AIS means. It says AIS type pleasure craft.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I'm sure.
It's awesome.
I'm sure it is. I bet he just takes his helicopter out there and just like, you know what? Pandemic happening? All right, let's get on the chopper and head on out to the old Bravo Eugenia, land it on that thing and party. That is.
So it's got the year was built, but there's two things where it says basically like, you know, looks like a lock. Like you can't see registered owner and manager. It's locked. You cannot see who it is. Like it's almost like you have to like buy a subscription to this vessel website to see the.
I definitely think you guys could write that off for a business class. I'm just saying.
What's even weirder, more crazy? I mean, you zoom out on the map, and just the amount of like pleasure yachts and stuff out there in the world is insane. I don't know how many thousands there are. It's just like covers the whole map in different colors. With all the everybody just sailing around the world,
wow,
that's impressive. But yeah, if you want to check out the daily status of the Bravo Eugenia, head on over to vesselfinder.com.
Oh my God!
Oh man, what a find!
Your go-to.
How
place
did you find that?
Stalking Jerry. We were talking about it on one of our Zoom calls last week. I forgot who actually told us about it, but it was one of the people that works for us, The Athletic.
That's hysterical. Found it,
and yeah.
So this is what happened. I'm the one that told you. I was waiting
there you
to
go.
See if you were going to bring this up.
I forgot it was you, John.
This is how it happened. Bob Stern was tweeting about it, and someone put that link into one of his tweets. And so when we were on a Zoom call, I brought it up to Bob. I was like, that is amazing. And so I'd been searching it the last, I don't know, a few days or whatever, just to see if it had moved, and it hasn't. But it seems like a dream life. I hope I can live it sometime.
Leave it to John Machota to find the latitude and longitude of Jerry's yacht. That's
so
amazing.
Actually funny story about that, because I watch reality TV, and as you guys know, Kristen Cavallari and Jay Cutler are getting a divorce. But this was like a month ago, right before it happened, right when like the quarantine like first started. And she was in, I think, the Bahamas or somewhere. And she, her hairdresser, like posted this photo on Instagram and was like, there's this yacht. He's like, watch me today. I'm going to get on this yacht. We already know who the people are. We're just trying to find out how to get in touch with them. And I look and I was like, oh my God, that's the location where like Jerry is. And so I DM'd him. I DM'd him and I was like, I know whose boat that is. And then he was like, and like I told, I was like, if that's like the Jones's boat, then like, I know who that is. And he was like, it is like, oh my God, like, can you get me in touch with them? And I was like, bro, I'm not about to like, I shouldn't even DM'd you, first of all, but I'm not about to like connect you with like an elderly man to get on his boat during a worldwide pandemic.
Wait, this is Jay Cutler you're talking about? Yeah.
This is Jay Cutler.
Imagine.
It was his hairdresser. Imagine but yeah, Jay Cutler was with them.
Well, imagine the paparazzi getting a photo of Jay Cutler on Jerry's boat. What would the freaking
I just want you guys to know.
You think Dalton's
back? I almost orchestrated some nonsense, but I decided not to.
God, I wish you would. I wish you would have. I wish there would have been some like spy photo of Jerry and Jay just hanging out on the deck, like sunbathing together.
The world would lose it.
Like drinking Miller Lights. Oh my gosh, I can't even imagine what Cowboys Nation would do.
He's next to another boat called the Gladiator, and then but it's weird because Jerry's boat is about three times as big as all these other boats.
Right.
He's also next to one called the Sea Star. Makes you wonder if that might be a cowboy boat as well.
Oh, here it is. I wonder. I heard that Jerry's wife like lives on it. Basically,
I will never go to another website. This is all I'm going to do now.
There's one called the Gladiator over by him. Mm-hmm. The Julia Dorfey, the Vision.
I think the Snyders own one too.
The Marcus.
I think.
There's none that are bigger than Jerry's. There's no chance. There's no chance that anyone in the NFL has a $250 million plus yacht. And we're talking about that. Like, that's how much Mark Cuban bought the Mavs for, was $250 million. That's so much money.
So Dan Snyder has a yacht named Lady S. So what we should do is just get a document together and track all the NFL owners and their yachts to see where they are at all the times. Because, if Snyder and Jerry are like close in proximity with their yachts, like they're conspiring, and I got to know about it.
I wonder if there's any kind of notification I can get whenever the Bravo Eugenia is on, en route somewhere. I need to get that text notification. Vessel Finder app, maybe they have that going somewhere.
How much is the Jerry one?
How much? $250 million.
This one's $180 million.
Oh, Jeff Bezos is $400 million.
Jeff Bezos is $400 million.
Yeah, it's called the
Flying. Well, he also has like 100 times more money than Jerry, which is insane to think about. You know, Jeff Bezos bought this, bought the most expensive house in LA. It was like a $200 million house or something. And it equated to like one of us and an average middle class, like, income spending $17 on a house.
Oh my gosh.
$200 million. Ugh. That's how much money he has.
I just feel bad about my life now.
Yeah. Dang it, Jeff. Well, it's funny that he got divorced and his wife automatically became like the second richest or the richest woman in the United States just by getting half, you know, chopping that thing in half. But
that's a glow up.
Well, I say, KT, maybe we leave with a little recommend of something you guys have enjoyed during the quarantine that we can recommend to the listener to maybe watch, listen to, something like that. What have you watched on Netflix lately?
Well, for me, so I've been in the process of kind of – so I never watched The Office like straight through in order. Oh, like I mentioned in the last episode, I've just like seen, you know
– How dare you? Right?
Well, you know, like if you think about when it came out, it was like college time for me.
The perfect time began. Is what you're saying.
So like, you know, to – Well, I don't know, it ended up not being like in terms of watching it in order, you know, and you know, in college, not having a DVR too. Like, you had to really, really plan your life really well back then. So I said, you know what? I'm tired of seeing a smattering of episodes, and I know the plots, and I kind of know everything that happens, and I know the characters well, and have for years, but let's rewatch it in order. So I've been doing that. I've been rewatching Community again because they put that on Netflix. But the thing that I watched that I would like to recommend to you guys, and I am not a fan of this band, but I did watch their documentary. If you guys have Apple TV, the Beastie Boys documentary is really good. It's 2 hours. And again, I'm a guy who kind of thinks they're kind of whack. You know, I kind of think anybody could have gone and kind of done some of the lyrical work that they did. But I have a new appreciation for the Beastie Boys after watching that documentary. It was very good, very well done. And it was 2 hours flew by. So that's what I would like to recommend to everyone.
Nice. Love me some Beastie Boys.
See, I don't. Like, you know, I just kind of thought it was like, I'm a guy and I'm going to make a rhyme. You know, and then, and I'm another guy. I do have time. And then, and it was like, it was felt like, okay, we got three guys and different voices. But, I, you know, they were seen, they were taken seriously by a lot of people in the rap community.
Can we get a rollback real quick on that one more time?
Yeah, I'm going to, I already got that as a drop. Cool. We're good.
I'm going to do a Beastie Boys song next week for Reggie Robinson.
Oh, I'm excited for that, I have to say. Yeah. I'm going to have to tune in solely for that as well. Y'all just keep on bringing the good content. I'm going to keep on tuning in.
Appreciate that. Yeah, I like that album, Ill Communication, KT. That's probably my favorite Beastie Boys record. But yeah, I'm not into the early, like, Fight for Your Right to Party stuff. I'm more into the, I don't know, mid-90s to late-90s kind of experimental Beastie Boys music.
Oh, I'll be quick, but that song they made as a joke to make fun of frat boys, and it became their biggest hit.
And it became a frat boy anthem. That's ironic.
They got famous off of it, got rich, and they were like, we turned into frat boys drinking all the time because that song made us famous.
Gosh.
They were playing that song ironically, and they hate it. They hate that song.
I'm sure.
It was really good watch.
That's funny.
I feel like most musicians hate their hits. I know. I've heard many times that Eminem can't stand like any of the songs, like doing the songs that were like.
Do you like him, John?
Oh yeah.
Or is he your Detroit boy? Like, are you like? Is he your game day playlist or like what's happening?
Oh, I think it goes by like different times in my life. Like, there was definitely an Eminem phase in my life. You know, growing up between when he was like first started getting really big in Detroit, obviously, you know, people were like, this guy, who is this dude? You know, how is the best rapper in the game right now a white dude? And how is the best golfer a black dude right now? It was just wild times. but obviously, like, it got to a point where it was just kind of like, it kind of got old. And so I kind of moved on. But oh yeah, when I was like in high school and then right after high school, I loved Eminem and
DMX. Did you bleach your hair?
I did, yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, it was more of... No, I swear to God.
It's
more
for
a basketball.
Please tweet this.
More for a basketball thing, like dyed my hair blonde before our like state playoffs or whatever with a bunch of other guys on the team. But yeah, no, a lot of people were dyeing their hair blonde at that time. Yeah, for sure. Like Eminem...
It doesn't make it less weird, like, John.
Yeah, obviously Eminem was... No, I know. But Eminem obviously was a big deal in Detroit. As he was everywhere else, but no, not anymore. Like I really don't follow him or anything like that, or really listen to it. I'd say, yeah,
I just want to make sure that we get a bet in place. Like if the Cowboys win the Super Bowl this year, will you dye your hair blonde again? Can we just make it?
No, I'll never dye my hair blonde again. It's so stupid.
Come on. No. We need good luck.
No.
Yeah. Come on, John.
I just feel like
let's move on.
So KT, you said you were watching The Office?
Yes, I am.
I'm actually, my recommend is I'm reading this book about The Office. It's an office oral history book, and it's called The Office, an oral history of The Office by, I think, Andy Green is the guy's name.
I'm buying this right now.
It's great. It just came out, and I can't put it down. I love The Office so much, and there's like a chapter on all the big episodes. And so every time I read a chapter, I have to stop down and watch the episode because they put so many nuggets about how the show was made and all that. I love oral histories. I finished the SNL one very recently and really enjoyed that. And so I was looking for another one kind of along those lines, and this one came out right at the right time. It's The Office Oral History by Andy Green. I know you guys will enjoy that if you need something to
I love
pass
that
the
one.
Time.
I'm making that purchase
so actually,
right now.
You guys are talking about The Office. My recommendation is, if you can find it, the Parks and Rec special. They did one like last week, I believe it was, Thursday or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was so good. It was so good. I mean, it was very simple. Like, obviously, you could tell they did it because they were quarantined. But, like, it was great. I loved it. If you can find it, I'm sure they'll play some sort of, like, rerun or whatever. Like, look on their channels.
It's on YouTube, actually, Kelsey. They put it for free since it's a fundraiser. So you can go to YouTube on NBC, I think, has it up.
That was great. So I loved that. And then Outer Banks. I've been watching a lot of Outer Banks on top of The Last Dance. But Outer Banks is awesome as well.
But before the Parks and Rec special, they aired a like another special, like a Paley Center special. It was just like 25 minutes, and it was kind of going through like lots of – it's almost like a documentary on Parks and Rec. It was just 20, 25 minutes, and it aired right before the special. Parks and Rec's my favorite show of all time, so I was kind of in tears the other night watching that.
Yeah.
It was kind of sad to see it come back.
I'm like working really hard. I'm working really hard to try and find you a picture, Kelsey, that I can text you with me.
Oh, we need to see this. You got to. What are you going to recommend, John?
I am going to go with – I'm just going to keep saying that everybody needs to watch. Actually, you know what? Before I get to that, Kent allowed me to watch Dark Waters was pretty decent, and Motherless Brooklyn. They were just solid, nothing great. The Scheme on HBO, I really like a lot. It's a documentary about the it's about basically behind the scenes college basketball and just the shadiness that goes on so that players can get paid and things like that. And there's just some really good wiretap or phone taps on Will Wade, the LSU coach, and Sean Miller, the Arizona coach. So that was pretty entertaining. But if anybody's going to watch any movie that I've seen within the last 2 or 3 years, watch Jojo Rabbit.
Yes.
Best movie I've seen.
Recently. Yes. Can't argue there, John. Can't argue there. Well,
I guess that's it, right?
I guess that's it.
Anything else? Okay. All right. Make sure you go download this episode so you have Kent's song and you just have it forever. Also, I will say this. Tim Cato did the article for The Athletic, the DFW Sports Fan Survey. And you could go in there. And I know that my station, I now work at a rock station, but we were very glad to be in the category of what is your favorite local sports radio station. So thanks to everyone who voted.
97
for
won the Eagle. I hope that was. That'd be so
we
funny.
We finished in second place. We were finished in second place, and I think we were going to win. But Bob on Friday at the ticket started pumping up this thing. I think he saw us because on Wednesday we started pushing it because we were like, this is going to be hilarious if we win best sports station, the station that's a rock station.
Hey, y'all got second, yeah, man. That's pretty big. Yeah.
I'm thrilled to be in second place. But like, if Bob didn't start pushing that on Friday, then I think we would have had a chance.
Probably.
But that's a really good. That's a very fun article to check out as well. It's really cool to get a poll of kind of 10 to 12 like really cool. It's almost like a sports census. Now that's a good article to check out. John's got a lot of work up as well, so make sure you just stay on The Athletic. Check it out. Also, if you get a chance, go check out Girls Talking Boys with Kelsey Charles.
Woo.
And her good friend Meg Murray as well, the brand new podcast. So give that a listen
that
as
new,
well.
New.
For Kelsey Charles. Kelsey, thank you for joining
Thanks,
us.
Thanks, guys,
thank
for
so
having
much.
Me. Always a pleasure. Enjoy hopping on. Happy to do it anytime.
And for Father John Machota, the late, great Father John Machota, once had dyed hair. We'll
he
see
will.
If he'll tweet it. And for the songstress, Kent Garrison, the man with vocal cords.
I'm an angel.
That I would love to steal.
I wish. I wish I had vocal cords. I'm sorry that anyone had to hear me sing, but that was the only way it was going to happen. I cannot sing.
You are the songbird
Honestly.
Of our generation.
I'm like, it's like Fergie and Jesus combined.
It's so true.
You're like a cross between, Marvin Gaye and an owl.
And an owl. Okay.
It's a real songbird.
That is a songbird. Yeah, literal.
I'm Kevin Turner, and that was another episode of About Them Cowboys. We'll do it again soon. Peace.